It's Reality Check with Craig Price.
I'm an idiot.
4 minutes in and I'm already wrong.
I'm like a monkey. Hello, look at me.
You're like A Beautiful Mind. I'm more like Forrest Gump. So it's
Craig Price is the man.
I knew it. Craig, shut up. It's Reality Check with Craig Price. This week, Michael Modjeleski talks about his life as an Alaskan naturalist. Thanks for downloading another episode. This week, I am really excited to talk to Michael Modjeleski because what he does with Princess Cruises is something that I would love to do, maybe when I retire, being able to go onto a cruise and talk to people about things that you really enjoy doing. And it's amazing that he has that life, and I really wanted to talk about some of the things that he's done and things that he's seen. Because, I enjoyed my Alaskan cruise, and being an amateur nature photographer, I just love taking pictures of wildlife. Whenever I travel, I try to go to zoos and take pictures of animals when I can. And it really is something that I enjoy doing. And if you want to see some of that photography, you can find me on Flickr and Instagram as CraigPrice47. You can check out my pics of my Alaskan cruise as well as other photos. Some of them have actually sold, which is weird. I actually sold a couple pictures at an exhibit a few months ago, and that's kind of cool because it's not something I ever expected or wanted to do. I never thought, hey, I'd be hanging in an art exhibit, but hey, stranger things have happened. But enough about me. Let's get our origami animal towels, some Dramamine, and go cruising with naturalist Michael Modjeleski. I've been on a cruise in Alaska. Like I said, I've gone from, we left from Vancouver, which is a beautiful place to start off from. It's a beautiful city. And we went for my birthday and we went up the Inner Passage, which is a fantastic cruise because you can see everything at all times. It's you never feel isolated like some cruises out in the major oceans. How did you get involved as a naturalist for the Princess America?
Well, I was hosting a TV show for the Outdoor Life Network, and we were down in Patagonia, which is at the bottom of the world, and we were on the Chilean side. There's two, Patagonia is shared by two countries, Argentina and Chile. So we were on the Chilean side, and it's so funny that top of the world, bottom of the world look very much the same. High mountains, fjords, and glaciers. So, but the thing about Patagonia, there's very little landmass down there to slow down the wind. And, you get winds of 80 to 100 miles an hour. So I was doing stand-ups in the field, and I could barely stand up and had a parka on and, like, icicles, on my mustache. So somebody at Princess Cruises at their head office in California happened to catch the show. They were having a sandwich at their desk, and they called my agent and said, hey, and they had heard about my book as well, Inside Passage, Living Killer Whales, Bald Eagles, Carcutal Indians was out. And Brian at Princess called my agent and said, could we pay Michael to go on vacation every summer? And once I got the specifics, I thought about it for 2 seconds. It's just an unbelievable gig.
Yeah, if someone called me up today and said, hey, do you want to go on a cruise? I don't know how many cruises you would end up doing in a season. But if they said you want to do it twice a year, and we'll pay you, of course. It's fantastic.
Oh, I pinch myself, and it's 20, it usually averages about 20 weeks, the cruise are about 7 days long up in Alaska. And like last summer, it was 20 consecutive cruises. And when people that have to pay maybe, thousands of dollars in airfare and all of that, when their jaws just drop open and they go, wait, we get off the ship and you stay on and they're paying you to be here. And I just, smile and pinch myself. I just feel so fortunate to go into Glacier Bay 20 times in a row. And as you know, Craig, being a photographer, the more you're in a place, the more your chances go up of getting great pictures. So maybe 1 week it's, white out and kind of foggy, misty. The next week you go in there and it's 75 degrees and there's not a cloud in the sky. So, for a photographer, it's just paradise to be able to repeat. And we often laugh about that Bill Murray movie, Groundhog Day, where he wakes up and he repeats the same day. We kind of call it Groundhog Week on the ship because Monday's Juneau, Tuesday's Skagway. But it's totally different. The weather's different and the passengers are different.
Well, also when you're a photographer and you keep going to the same place over and over again, you start to understand what could happen. Because a lot of times when it's your first trip, like when I was in Alaska and we were at Glacier Bay, you know, you don't quite understand how calving works, how when the ice collapses off of the glacier into the water. So you don't know what to listen for. You don't know what to look for. And oftentimes you're taking pictures of something that already happened versus getting prepared and taking the picture of it actually happening.
That is so true. You're behind the curve rather than being ahead of it. And that's why we get, on Princess, we get so many what I call alumni. People seem to take their first Alaska cruise just to feel it out and figure it out. And they will come back summer after summer, and they've got it down to a science as far as what tours to take. Or there's so many great excursions. You could literally go maybe 30, 40 years in a row and not do everything from, you know, taking glaciers up to helicopters, rather, up to the glaciers, to dog sled, to whale watch, to zip line. I mean, the variety up there is amazing.
And then you can also get the Denali train situation. I know a lot of people who actually came on board mid-cruise, because they had taken this long train ride through the mountains of Alaska into you know, to where we were, and I believe it was either Juneau or Ketchikan. I can't quite remember. But there's so much to do. So what did you actually do besides? I know you gave presentations on ship, but as officially a tour guide in Alaska, what were you doing?
Well, I'll give 4 1-hour illustrated PowerPoint presentations in what we call the Big House in the Big Princess Theater. And unlike cruising to maybe the Caribbean, where there is a little bit of history, but it's mainly just sort of, you know, pretty water and drinking and relaxing, people come to Alaska to learn, because that place is so multidimensional. Not only do you have the scenery, the wildlife, but you have such an amazing history with Russia owning it, selling it to us for $7.2 million Seward's Folly. You've got this native population that has never been conquered by the white men. They've never been thrown away on useless reservations. So the Tlingits and the Shoshinians and the Kwakiutls in the Inside Passage, they have their pride and heritage intact. There's just so many levels to Alaska. So as a naturalist, I try, each show is about a different thing. And it's so amazing to talk, what you're showing them, they are seeing in real time out the window of the cruise ship, and certainly on their own adventures on shore. So, and then being an author, it's a perfect gig to have your books on a table outside the theater, you know, because you've got this captive audience. We get all 50 states and 30 different countries on average each week. For the Alaska cruises. So it's just, you know, the United Nations of humanity. And then also I go up to the bridge, besides being in the theater doing the formal presentations, all throughout the week, probably once or twice a day, I'll go up to the navigational bridge, which unfortunately after 9-1-1 is very secure. We used to be able to bring friends up there, but now you do an eyeball scan and a fingerprint to get in. And the naturalist will have a microphone that goes out on the outside decks to announce, oh, humpback whales at 1 o'clock. We've got sea lions all hauled out, you know, on the port left side. And you point out the wildlife as we go through different areas.
And my guest today is Michael Modzelewski. I hope I said that correctly, because I've been practicing in my head. But
perfecto.
Yeah. When I took a Holland America tour, and what happened is they actually had park rangers run up against the boat as it's going in the morning. They had to jump onto the boat while it's moving and did exactly what you were doing. So it's amazing how much time and effort do you have to put in to understand what's going on. So what kind of studying and what kind of research are you doing on a regular basis to be able to answer all these questions that people have?
Well, I was very fortunate to live for 2 years on a wilderness island in the Inside Passage to Alaska. And being out there, my prime emphasis was to study killer whales or orcas. And that I did from a kayak and also from snorkeling and diving with them. So that 2 years in writing my first book about that area gave me the expertise. And, you know, when you get up in front of an audience, and just a little example, like last summer, this guy was dragged into the theater by his wife. And I mean, I could tell, lecture, why do I want to go to a lecture? And, you know, he didn't know that I was up there at the lectern about to start, and they sat in the first row. And I overheard, this better be good, he said to his wife. And then I'm going, you know, kind of getting self-conscious about it. But I have such a passion for that place, because that's where it's the home of my soul. As you know, the beauty there, the light is so pure, the water, you know, wildlife. If you can't get inspired in the Inside Passage to Alaska, then we might as well shovel some dirt on it, because it's just an amazingly beautiful place. So living there, you know, primarily in isolation for 2 years and writing that first book kind of gave me, you know, the knowledge that I since have probably quadrupled as far as, you know, other expeditions up there and going back to the island. But that was the prime emphasis for me getting the job.
Well, what made you want to go spend 2 years alone on an island in Alaska? Because that, I mean, to me, it sounds great for the first, oh, I don't know, 2 days, and then I would like to get something to eat that was maybe cooked by someone else.
That's exactly it. That's how I opened my latest book. That I'm on an airplane, you know, and I'm having a nervous breakdown because, you know, this thing's hurtling 500 miles an hour through space to go to New York City. And the stewardess, chicken or beef, she puts the meal in front of him. He peels aluminum foil back. He goes, this is the first meal I haven't had to cook or kill in 5 years. You know, so that's so perceptive. Yeah, I was a journalist traveling all over the world, starving to death, just going from one assignment to the next for newspapers like LA Times, New York Times. I mean, it was great, but, you know, there was no security. And I was sort of like writer in search of my first book, something that I could really put my heart into. And no accidents in life. I met a woman at a design conference in Colorado. I had never been to Vancouver. I'd never been to the West Coast. So living in Colorado, I hitchhiked all the way to LA, all the way up the West Coast, the US, spent 2 weeks with Genevieve in Vancouver on her sailboat. And we went all the way up to Juneau. I didn't even know the Inside Passage was up there. Killer whales following us, bears pulling salmon out of the river. I mean, it just was so magical. And she introduced me to the man that originally owned this island that I ended up staying on.
Now, this wasn't like a grizzly man experience where you felt like you and the bears were one, and then you had to make sure you didn't get eaten. This is what you took precautions, I'm hoping.
Well, as you probably know from the cruise, Alaska can seduce you with beauty, and in the next minute, it could try to kill you very quickly. In fact, Jack London wrote that there's 1,000 ways Alaska can kill a person, because it's very dangerous up there. I mean, the water temperature alone is so cold that if you go overboard, you only have 10 to 20 minutes to live.
And that is a big thing, that because when you're in the Inside Passage, the land looks so close, and you feel comfortable. I felt great and wonderful. I was always on deck because I could always see the mountains. But in the back of my head, I knew that if something happened, I couldn't swim that far, even if the water was warm. But the water is freezing cold, so even the comfort that you feel because you're so close to land, the hidden beneath that is the thought that you are still not going to make it because the water's too cold.
Well, that's what kills most people in the Inside Passage, is a simple act of falling overboard. And the second thing is the clarity of the sky and the light there, because there's no pollution. None of those towns, as you saw, are industrial at all. So there's no particles in the air. And you literally can see sometimes 100 miles in the 360 circle. It's so big and expansive. So I always tell everybody, double or triple what your eye is telling your brain how far away something is. Because you go, oh, I've got half a tank of gas in my outboard engine. Or, you know, I'm tired in my kayak, but I can make it over there to that shore. 2 hours later, you're only halfway there. And you run out of gas, and away you go, swept out to sea. Because it just fools you constantly with that clarity and purity, you know, of the air there.
So did you run into any issues alone in the wild there for those 2 years? Was there any moment?
You know what? If we have 9 lives like a cat, I'm down to about 1.5 left.
A half life?
In fact, I opened my first book Inside Passage with Getting Caught in a Storm, because the nearest store was 12 miles away. And I mean, we jump in a car and that's a 10-minute drive, but 12 miles on a very dicey ocean. And even though the Inside Passage is what we call a protected waterway, it's not the open ocean. The waves can be worse because the tides get funneled into these narrow areas and they stack up these haystack waves. So you learn to read the weather by looking at the natural signs. There were no wind doggies one day. There were no shredded clouds showing that wind's coming. But you know that expression, calm before the storm? I should have known to pay attention to the birds and the animal life. I thought I'd make a run to the nearest native reservation, stock up on some coffee beans, rice, stuff like that. I got halfway out there and I go, wait a minute, it's too quiet. You know, where's the herring gulls? And how animals can tell if a storm's coming or earthquake. They were all battening down the hatches in the forest, and there's these strange winds called lulawaws, where if the air is warmer than the glaciers, it produces these tornadoes of air mass that come sliding down off those glaciers hanging on the mountains. And all of a sudden, it's from dead calm, it's blowing 80 miles an hour, and there's waves 12 to 14 feet. Welcome to Alaska.
So do you actually get a chance to give actual tours, or are you just doing those four presentations?
No, a lot of times I'll meet people because I'm a marathon runner and have tried to stay, you know, be an athlete and stay in shape my whole life. So the people come up to the book table afterwards, that are photographers such as yourself, and they want to kind of push it, maybe past the normal, you know, take a bus out to Mendenhall Glacier kind of thing. Once I check out their fitness level or all that, I mean, we climb the mountains in Skagway. We go to the top of Arctic Brotherhood. You can do 10,000 vertical feet in one day. But I mean, you got to be in beast mode, you know, pretty much the whole climb. Or once in a while, I'll take people in the ice caves in Juneau. Very dangerous. I almost have to have them sign a waiver because you go into the side of Mendenhall Glacier. There's kind of a secret trail out there. And the blue light and the bubble-like forms in that ice when you're actually inside the glacier, it's one of the greatest days of your life. So I'll do those sort of secret Alaska tours, you know, with people that I connect with.
See, that's why I needed you on my mind, because we had a great time and we had a great tour, but you're doing these unofficial excursions. You would have gone there on your own anyways because of the time you had, because it's so beautiful. But now you're connecting with folks and you're saying, hey, I'm going to be going there anyways if you'd like to come with me. Because I would have loved the Mendenhall Glacier was fantastic. And I took a whole bunch of pictures. We walked through the forest to get there and it was just amazing. But to be under it in those ice caves, I mean, I've seen some pictures on your website. It's just amazing. So you're not officially doing tour guides, but you are offering yourself up to folks that you think, hey, these people seem nice.
Yeah, because, you know, when you get off the beaten path, not that the beaten path isn't beautiful, and it is, especially your first time to Alaska, you should do, you know, the normal tours, or if you have elderly parents or grandparents with you, you can, you know, share all that together. But for people that, you know, always are sort of pushing the limits and want to get those extra special pictures, then I take them to, you know, sort of the hidden areas and the secret spots. And it's transformative up there. It's just absolutely amazing.
So what is the one thing that if you're going to go to on one of these Alaskan tours that people forget to bring, but you need to bring? Because I know you obviously a camera and some warm weather clothes, but I mean, is there something that people are always going, oh, I didn't know I needed to bring that?
Well, you know, the amazing thing about Alaska is a lot of people go, I don't want to cruise to Alaska, it's too cold. Well, in the summertime, it rarely gets below 60 degrees, 55, but you can experience microclimates there because it's so big and expansive. It can be, say, 65 degrees at sea level when you arrive in Juneau. But if you're going to take a helicopter up on top of Mendenhall Glacier, you're going to be about 10, 12 degrees colder up on the big ice. Or even if you go up on Mount Roberts, I don't know if you guys did that, where there's a tram, there's great hiking trails up there. you're about 2,000 feet above sea level, and you're talking maybe 5, 6 degrees, 8 degrees colder. So the biggest thing is, and people make the mistake, is to bring layers of clothing. And I always, there's that great expression, there's no such thing as bad weather, there's only bad clothing. And if you start with a t-shirt, then you go sweatshirt, sweater, and then you have that outer shell windbreaker raincoat. You can, you know, put a layer on, take one off to adjust to, you know, the climates. Because when you're cold and miserable, you know, you're not thinking pictures, you're just thinking keeping warm, you know.
Now, when you do all these talks and you're interacting with the audience, is there something that always surprises you about either the lack of knowledge or something they do know about nature that always surprises you? Because my experience is a lot of people really don't know much about anything outside of their city, state. They don't understand the nature or the some of the dangers, but also some of the ways some of the animals are unbelievably endangered.
Well, that is so true. Every week, and I see it year after year. I've been doing my job now. I mean, I just love it. And knock on wood, I have a lifetime contract with Princess, but this will be my 18th summer. And I see the big changes probably in the last 10 years is people are so addicted to their technology and their devices. And so much so that it's like crackberry or addicts, because the first day when we leave Seattle on the particular itinerary that I do, we go out to sea where there's no signal. And people are walking around like tapping on their phones, you know, but it's not even connected. So eventually, once they get into Glacier Bay, we go into another place called Tracy Arm, where you've got 7,000-foot mountains coming right out of 1,000-foot deep water. They forget those devices. They forget the technology. And they open up to the beauty of it. But unfortunately, they've seen a lot of crazy videos and nature shows where, oh, isn't that bear cute? Or just like what you're saying. And they will endanger themselves, you know, trying to get that shot to post on Instagram or Facebook. And every year there's a bear that maybe gives a love tap to somebody that's just too doggone close and invading that personal space, you know.
Yeah, I have not witnessed it, but I was in a situation in Ketchikan where we're in the parking lot. This is the least forested area that we've been in the entire day when we did our rappelling, and a bear ran across the parking lot to head towards a salmon farm just down the road. And, you know, I grew up around black bears in New England, and they're not dangerous if you just leave them alone. And they're much smaller than brown bears in Alaska. But I know that if you see a bear, you don't run after it. But I had several folks from other countries grab their cameras and start running after the bear. And so no one got hurt because the bear is much faster than they are. But if he had decided, I don't need to go get these fish, I got these people coming at me. It could have gotten really dangerous.
Or, you know, Craig, just like you're saying, if it had been a cub and there was mom like behind that cub, maybe 10 yards, 20 yards unseen in the woods, there could have been 10 dead people that were chasing that bear to get a picture. Because that's when most attacks happen in Alaska. Is a mother, you know, protecting babies, or if you surprise them.
Have you ever been in a situation where it had to be an animal of some sort that might have gotten you in a precarious position?
Yeah, I've twice in my life, living on the island, visiting there, twice I've been 5 yards away from a threatening grizzly bear. And I'm very lucky to be alive. In fact, the first time I was coming, I was at the salmon stream, and they say that if you're out there alone, you should wear a bear bell, or you should sing, or about every 2 minutes, clap your hands. If you give them advance notice that you're around, then you'll never see them. They'll step off the trail and deposit their opinion of you with this big hunk of bear manure there on the trail, but sometimes it's still steaming. I mean, that's how close you can be to them. So I was making a blind turn around this granite boulder, and a bear was coming down the trail along that salmon stream. Thank God I didn't make that turn about 2 seconds earlier, or I would have bumped, I mean, right into the bear and wouldn't be here today. But, you know, whether any animal, whether it's a kitty cat or your dog at home, when they lay their ears flat, that's telling you they're coming.
Well,
this is going to sound crazy, but I didn't have a gun because a lot of the old timers, you know, they say, yeah, guns are a good idea in Alaska, not to shoot the bear, but to shoot yourself. Because they're so big that very few guns could stop, you know, a 1,000-pound brown bear or a grizzly bear. I didn't have pepper spray. I was, you know, it was my second year when I was up there. So I have a teacher named Lucy. She's a Tlingit Indian woman. And she always told me, Michael, if you're ever that close to a threatened grizzly bear, you should sing to them. And I go, what? Sing? She goes, yes. They're not going to understand your words, of course, but the melody of your song might calm them down. And I mean, the Indians and the natives up there are very mystical. So somehow that stuck in the back of my brain. But you've got 2 seconds to pull a song out of your internal iTunes, you know? And what song came out of my mouth? But I could barely get it out because I had this dry cotton mouth from fear. A song from a drunken karaoke night in college, Neil Diamond. But it wasn't Sweet Caroline. I sang, you don't bring me flowers. You don't sing me love songs anymore. And the bear crashed away in pain.
I'm sure most of the people at karaoke did as well. Because that's the one thing.
It worked better than a gun. Yeah.
That's the one thing about karaoke. You don't really need to say drunken karaoke before it. It's implied.
Exactly. Karaoke. We call it on the cruise ship. You know?
Yeah, we've wandered past places on the boat that they had karaoke night, so you just kind of wander by and go, oh, if somebody, some old man's going to sing Frank Sinatra horribly one more time, I'm going to go up to the bar and order as many drinks as I can. But you've been very fortunate because not only were you doing Alaska in the summertime, I'm not sure if you're still doing that, but you were doing Africa in the winter.
Yeah, Africa's changed a bit because of the terrorism, and it's so sad. Because imagine bringing these floating white castles into these impoverished places. And, you know, Kenya even, which used to be the center to go on a safari, ever since the terrorists blew up that shopping mall. And, you know, with the threat of ISIS now, it's like the cruise lines have really cut back their itineraries. They pretty much go to Cape Town, which is safe.
Oh, in South Africa.
Yeah, South Africa, and they'll go out to Madagascar and do the Indian Ocean Islands, Seychelles, things like that. And then the piracy off of Somalia, you know. But I think the last time I was there was 6 years ago, and I did a crystal cruise, and we still went, like, all the way around Africa. And that was magical, because Alaska and Africa are very much similar. They're not climate-wise, but they're very similar with native people and wildlife and that sense of freedom and you know, vitality and joy.
Now, I have to ask this one question about cruising, and then I want to talk about your new book, but this is the last one, and I have to ask it because it comes up whenever I talk about going on cruises. And my wife and I, we try to go on one a year, you know, to different places. Usually we try to go someplace different. We do expect to go to Alaska at some point again, and as quickly as we can, but, you know, we also like to try different things. Have you had experience? Is it the Norwalk virus? Because people always tell me they don't want to get on the MS diarrhea. They're worried about going on the cruise ship and getting sick.
Well, the cruise lines have learned so much and they've adapted. I would say 10 years ago, they actually aborted a cruise because progressively throughout the weeks, more and more people were getting sick. And this was a cruise out of Vancouver. And it got so bad, 1 week it would be 75 people. And then the next week it was 150. And it got so bad that the doctor, you know, down in these small clinics, he got sick. And he's making house calls to cabins with an IV drip in his own arm, wheeling it down the hallways. So finally, we kept the ship offshore in quarantine from Vancouver for a week to break the germs. The chain of command. But imagine the paperwork of Princess having to contact everybody who was scheduled for that cruise week. And they said, sorry, we don't want any more people getting sick. They threw away all the mattresses, the bedding, they bleached the walls, And then, thank God, they caught the germ, and away we went for the rest of the summer. But now they've gotten so good, if anybody shows any signs of Norwalk virus or flu, they quarantine them in their room. They put that yellow tape across their door. They don't let you out. They have the hand dispensers with the antiseptic hand rub, you know, up at the buffet. So it's gotten a lot better.
Yeah,
you know, every once in a while there's an outbreak. Like, what was it last winter in the Gulf? You know.
Yeah, and my wife, thankfully, my wife is like Howard Hughes. She's got those little bottles of hand sanitation gel on her, even when she's not on the cruise. I mean, she's just constantly making sure that no one gets sick because she's, like I said, she's germaphobe, but she likes to travel. So it's kind of one of those conflicting things where she's like, I want to go on this thing, but I don't want to get sick, but I still want to go. And you rarely do get sick, but it does happen. And I just wanted to know if you ever got, and I know you got malaria one time in Africa, so I wasn't sure if the Alaskan cruise, you got the whole
That Norwalk virus is nasty, but the only good thing, the silver lining in that cloud, is it doesn't last very long. It's what they call a 24-hour virus.
Yeah.
My wife actually was on the cruise when there were still about 150 people getting sick, and I thought she was going to break a rib.
Oh.
Because, you know, the vomiting is just so strong, and I felt so bad for her. But she felt fine, you know, like a day later. It's just very intense.
It just ruins the middle of a vacation, that's all.
Yeah, but the cruise lines have gotten so good and so on top of it now. I mean, they have guys in hazmat suits. Like I say, if anybody shows signs, they keep them in that room. They do the blood test. They isolate them from, you know, the rest of the cruise population. So when it does happen, of course, it's all over the media and the news, but it's probably now, I would say, 1% of all the cruises that go out, you know, if that. They've really gotten so much better at it.
Well, before I let you go, you've got a new ebook out called Wildlife, and it kind of talks about your exploits on these cruises and a little bit beforehand, thanks to a phenomenon that happened to you through Cosmo Magazine. Can you explain Wildlife a little bit and then give us a little background on it?
Yeah, well, I was, as I mentioned earlier, about living on this wilderness island, and, you know, I had no dates out there because, in fact, the ratio of male to female in British Columbia and Alaska is 10 to 1, 10 males to every one female out in the bush or the wilderness. In fact, the gals in wilderness Alaska have a saying that the odds are good, but the goods are odd.
Yeah.
And it's true. I mean, you got all these lone wolves, guys living in cabins, mumbling to themselves and twitching around when they see a human being.
Sounds like a catch.
Yeah, I mean, I had that experience. You know, it was wonderful being isolated because the only person I had to worry about keeping alive was myself. I could concentrate on my work and my writing. So I wrote this book, my first book, about the experiences up there. And unbeknownst to me, in New York City, Cosmopolitan Magazine, which is a woman's magazine that goes out all over the world, like 100 countries, 87 languages, every month they have a guy in there who's single, a bachelor of the month, that women can write to. And my editor hatched this plan with Helen Gurley Brown, the editor-in-chief at Cosmo at that time. So I come back from the wilderness. I can't talk. I can't walk on concrete. And I'm Mr. November. Long story short, I got 5,000 letters from women around the world, every man's fantasy, and I dated my way down two mailbags, and at the bottom of the second mailbag after a couple of years was my letter from the woman that I married. So there was a pot of gold at the end of that rainbow. So Wildlife, Misadventures of a Cosmo Bachelor is a lot about Alaska and everything I learned about women as well.
Yeah, because I would imagine at some point during that period, you would have rather faced a grizzly bear in the woods than some of these crazy ladies.
That's exactly right. It was so scary. I mean, you know, it was like walking into a female candy store and the master of the universe said, hey, the lids are off all the jars. Help yourself to as many flavors as you want for as long as you want. And I didn't get any work done. I didn't get any sleep. It just was like, in fact, one chapter in the book is called Sugar Shock. Because it was like eating tiramisu every hour, you know.
I was going to say, you might have probably walked bow-legged for about a year and a half.
But, I mean, I went from famine to peace. I had no dates for years in the wilderness, you know, in the Inside Passage there. And then I come home, And I mean, there's 5,000 letters, but that's kind of my life. It's one extreme or the other. There's no middle ground.
Well, I want everyone to know that if they do, you're on the Golden Princess, I believe. Is that correct?
This summer, I'll be on the Crown Princess.
On the Crown Princess.
I always do the Saturday departure out of Seattle round trip. And Craig, if you guys ever come back, I would love to be your personal guide up there.
Believe me, now that I know that you're with Princess, because we did Holland America, which was a fantastic cruise line, so I'm not going to disparage any.
They're all owned by Carnival. Yeah. Company,
But Holland was fantastic. We were on the Zuider Dam, and now that I know that you're on the Princess, it'll give me more incentive and probably a little bit more leverage with my wife to get up there quicker. I'd absolutely love to.
I'm making you a promise right now. If you do come, I will personally guide you guys into the ice caves.
Oh, absolutely.
For pictures of that blue light and those bubble-like ice forms. It's outrageous.
Well, you do know this is recorded, so I definitely have proof now.
Yeah, now you have proof. But you know what's funny? We set our watches on 2 minutes because you're getting dripped on. I mean, any moment that the whole glacier could collapse on you. And I go, okay, James, the buddy I went in there with, I go, 2 minutes, let's get our shots. 20 minutes later, we're still inside, deeper into the glacier. It just keeps pulling you in there. So you got to be careful,
Well, like I said, it is mesmerizing. And where can people find you and buy some of your books?
Amazon.com is the easiest way. And the latest book, Wildlife, is two separate words. And if they just type that in, because Mo Gillespie's kind of a handful to spell, Wildlife, the Miss, M-I-S-S, Adventures of a Cosmo Bachelor, then all my books will show up on the screen. But thank you so much for having me on. It's really wonderful to talk about the place that I love the most.
Well, we'll definitely have links up on the website, and I really appreciate your time because I know that anybody who goes to Alaska, and they always want to go back. I have not met anybody who's not taken a cruise like this and decided, oh, yeah, that was good. I'm okay. No, it's I can't wait to go back, and it's unbelievable. And if there's someone like yourself who's got the expertise and the knowledge, it just makes it so much more fun.
I pinch myself. The emails that people write and, to come back over and over, and they all say the same thing. Alaska was better, bigger, and more than I ever thought it could be. I hear those words over and over. And how many places in the world can really do that? Not only live up to the hype, but exceed it. And that place does.
Thanks again to Michael for his time and his offer to take me on a tour. I'm going to do my best to cash in that favor. You can count on that. Don't forget the podcast app where you can not only download the latest episodes, but extra goodies like ebooks, chapter samples, bonus episodes, and more. Email Craig at speakercraigprice.com with guest suggestions, comments, or questions. Like the Facebook page and follow @RealityCheckPod on Twitter. See you next week.